98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. He played tackle in the NFL for more than a decade. Max Starks. Max Starks. Maximum Football. Maximum Football. With Doug and Wolf.
Please welcome, from the University of Florida, tackle Max Starks.
Max Starks. Man, Max, we got a lot going on in the 8 o'clock hour this morning. Rush Hour rebooted 15 minutes. General Manager Mike Hazen coming up in 45 minutes to talk about the struggles of the D-backs. So I want to get right into it. A, how's the family? B, who's the starting right tackle for the Arizona Cardinals?
Well, answering the first one, family is great. Girls are actually, funny enough, still asleep. They're enjoying their last little bit of late stay up time of summer, so win for me. And then starting right tackle will be Kelvin Beachum. In my mind, I think that's where we're going. I think Josh Jones too raw, too much to still learn in person. And then of course you still have Justin Murray who's in the mix. I think that will help ease some of the transition for Josh Jones, but I think you go with the tried and true veteran, a guy who already knows a lot of the lingo and system in Kelvin Beachum. He was a starting left tackle last year in the NFL. So, I mean, the guy has experience. He's smart enough, and I think he'll step right in and he'll fit in well with that group. He's already been training all offseason with DJ Humphreys and Justin Pugh, so he already knows some of the starters. So it would be a natural fit to start, and a guy who has that game-starting experience you want when you're looking at a starter in this league.
You know, I'm having a tough time this morning, Max, because although I will never, ever question anybody that wants to opt out, that's your own personal choice in this pandemic. There's no doubt about that, right? That I will never judge anybody that chooses to opt out. But having said that, man, I wanted Marcus Gilbert so badly this year. And the fact that he's not there, that's a loss to this offensive line.
No, most definitely. I think when you think about what this line was going to be going into last season, right, Wolf? Well, if you think about how it looked, I mean, it looked like a line. You know, you had some guys across the board. It looked like, okay, this is the NFL. This line, if it mm-hmm. plays like it looks, this is formidable. You know, you got too many twin towers between DJ and Marcus, guys who from my alumni. So, you know, they're from the shape and mold of what a Gator offensive tackle okay. should be. I'm not going to go ahead and go too deep into that. A pride thing for me. I would have loved to have seen that. But I think also you look at it, you know, Marcus coming off an ACL injury as well. No offseason, no real opportunities to test it. And for whatever reason, you know, decided that in the best interest of his health and his family's health, opt out. But I think still, when you look at who you've got in the offseason in the last couple of weeks, mind you, with Kelvin Beachum, I think you got a steal. Especially when you look around the league and you see the other guys who have opted out as well, right? You look at the Nate Solders, you look at the Marcus Cannons of the world. The Cardinals got a deal because there's not as many options available. I mean, when the Cardinals took Beachum, it was when Jason Peters reluctantly, as he says, signed with the Philadelphia Eagles again. So really having starting caliber tackles is very tough, and I'm sure a lot of teams wish they were in that position now. And so I think it was very good of the Cardinals to get Kelvin Beachum when they did, because if you would have gotten this opt-out and not had him on the roster, it would have been, okay, throw the young guy in the fire, or we keep going with Justin Murray and continue to build with him. So at least you have that experience and depth, and you've got a tried-and-true starter on your roster to actually plug and play.
Talking to Max Starks, two-time Super Bowl-winning offensive lineman for the Pittsburgh Steelers. Max, coronavirus training camp, what's going to be the biggest problem for an offensive lineman with no OTAs, no mini camp, and now for a lot of teams, very few practices where you're actually hitting and no preseason games?
I think the biggest challenge is going to be actually keeping those guys near each other, because that was a funny thing. So as I was talking to one of my friends yesterday and we were having a conversation, you know, we came to the realization that of all of the positions on the football field, I think the riskiest position that's going to be for trying to keep COVID out of your locker room is going to be the offensive line room. Because of all the position groups and all of the teams, the only position that has – A, is the largest concentration of one group of players. I mean, it's almost 20% of your team roster is the offensive line, right? 10 out of 53. So on top of that, it's also the only one that has a minimum requirement that is also the highest number on the field at any time. You must have five offensive linemen on the field. Mm-hmm. So
on top of that,
yeah,
literally.
Literally. So it's going to be the biggest challenge is keeping that group together, because if you lose some D linemen, you can switch up your front, right? You can move down to two D linemen. You could even go down to one D lineman if you wanted and have guys in a stand-up schoolyard, old-school Baltimore defense. You can subtract other positions and add other positions, but offensive line is the only one where you must have five on the field. So it's imperative that that group stays as accountable and responsible as possible, you know, because you can't take one guy testing positive there because the contact tracer automatically takes the adjacent guy. And if it's a guy in the middle, it takes the two adjacent guys. Mm. So you have to be very vigilant in that offensive line, because I feel like that's the most sensitive but yet the tightest group. So that's where the biggest emphasis is going to be. I think the guys can figure it out. If you have a bunch of vets on the team, they can figure out their communication and nuances, right, through Zoom, and they'll be at training camp. So they'll be within places where they can talk to each other and be around each other. But that's the biggest thing, is going to be the health and making sure those guys are vigilant.
You also have to acknowledge the fact that with every pile, there's an average of 2.3 offensive linemen in that pile. And see, that's the problem right there. All right? These guys are going to be laying all over each other.
Yeah. I mean, hey, outside zone, and if you get it 15 yards down the field where you get a fumble, is your best chance of success of not getting a big guy lumbering into the pile. But
the only one that gets hit more is a fullback and a Mike backer. Okay, that's all I'm going to say. A fullback and a Mike backer.
It always comes back to the fullback.
It always does. Patrick Ricard?
It seems like there's always a stat that Wolf will have that has a fullback as a leader in some way.
But you're not going to deny it, Max. I mean, you
can't. I can't. I can't deny it. But at the same time,
think of the high impact collision with a fullback, and especially
and a Mike backer.
Exactly. Can you imagine the exchange in body fluid? You know what I'm talking about.
Exactly. But I'll also say, when a fullback's in the game, it's almost 85% sure that it's going to be a run where a fullback leads. But also, the league
doesn't take you right to the ball.
Yeah, exactly. You just follow that guy. Follow the guy with the short neck, with a little cowboy collar and an extra big mouthpiece in.
Well, that's the guy Kyle Shanahan, yeah. Max.
I know, exactly. Kyle is different with Juszczyk, but
yes.
I think when you look around the league, I mean, I think that's why you've had some guys – who have decided to opt out from the fullback position, right? Because they know what their job is. I'm the missile.
Oh, my goodness.
That is my one job, is I'm going in and I blow things up.
Yes.
Last question.
Yeah, there's no other thing.
Last question for you, Max. It's only August 5th. You got plenty of time to change your mind, but give me a number. How many games will Josh Jones start this year?
Let's see. Josh Jones, okay. Take out the injury factor. Mm-hmm. No, I'm going to count the injury factor. I'm going to say Josh Jones will start. You know, I'm going to go with four. I'm going to go with maybe four games this year. I think if guys are healthy, if DJ's healthy, if Kelvin's healthy, Justin Murray's your early swing guy. I think he comes in and swings probably about midseason. Maybe he usurps Justin Murray once they feel comfortable enough with Josh. But I think if DJ goes down, that means Kelvin now goes to left. I think he's your natural left tackle swing. I don't think you put Murray over there, because Kelvin Beecham's been 8 years at a left tackle. So he knows that, and that's like riding a bike for a guy who's a cyclist. So you know, I think that's kind of where you are. So I think he moves in that type of situation. But if health is not a factor, I think you can run with both those tackles.
Max, love you, brother. Thank you so much for coming
on. Man, my pleasure as always, guys.
Absolutely. Okay, there's Max Starks, our own starting left tackle for the Doug and Wolf Show, joining us to talk a little Cardinals as they're in training camp. Coming up next.
I think when you see somebody do something that's totally outside of their nature.
That's the definition of the panic button. How many times has Torrey Lovello pressed it? It's next on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. Doug and Wolf's Rush Hour Reboot. Rush Hour Reboot. Getting you up to speed on everything happening in sports this morning. Brought to you by 72 Soul. Get the price for your home at 72soul.com.
So every weekday at 8 o'clock, Maloney takes over for your Rush Hour Reboot unless the starting right tackle for the Arizona Cardinals opts out of the season, and we need to get word from our starting tackle on what's the next step. And then it's at 8:15, and now here's Maloney.
So Madison Bumgarner's early season struggles continued last night in the D-backs 8-2 loss to the Astros. So what happened?
I don't know. I just wasn't very good, to put it bluntly. Just seemed like I couldn't get anything going for us, and that can't happen, especially in a season like this one.
Is it time to be worried about the D-backs' ace?
I'm not worried about Madison Bumgarner. The reason being is because he was good in his first two starts. He wasn't great in his first two starts. He was good. I think he's going to be able to work this out. I think he's a pitcher first, not a thrower. He never has been a thrower. He's always been a pitcher, very similar to a Zach Greinke. I'm not worried about Mad Bum. I think he'll work this out. Hopefully it's going to be sooner as opposed to later.
I do think he'll work this out, but I'm a little more concerned the Diamondbacks could be out of the race by the time he does. I think he knows exactly what he needs to go through to get himself ready for a regular season, and coronavirus has cost him that. And I think he's going to be chasing his tail most of the year. I think a lot of you are going to be really down on the signing of Mad Bum for this year, and I'm already ready to say I think he'll come back well for 2021. But I don't think you'll see a solid, strong Mad Bum until September, and by then it'll be too late.
There's a lot of speculation that Torrey Lovello was trying to send a message to his team when the sixth inning started with five new D-backs players in the field. The skipper addressed that speculation after the game.
No. I don't send messages like that. I'll send messages directly face-to-face with guys and have those conversations. I just wanted to get some of our guys have been going every day, a little bit more rest, get them off of their feet.
Do you believe him?
Listen, you can say whatever you want to say right there, right? But Torrey Lovello believes, I think, what he's saying and doesn't think he's lying to you. I think he basically was saying, you know what? We stink. We stink right now. I don't think he was trying to actually send him a message. I think he was trying to say, we stink and we're going to do something about it. And if you don't believe me, watch this.
I think it's total semantics, so I'm not calling him a liar. But it is bogus. What it's really saying in his heart is, I've already sent them to message. Now I'm just reinforcing it. So there's no such thing in the game of baseball as having an entire team pulled out in the sixth inning when you are in a pressure-packed situation than a manager saying, I've had enough. I've had enough with these at-bats. And here's the thing. A rookie pitcher came in and had 5 of 6 innings, a rookie pitcher, with less than 14 pitches per inning. I mean, this is organizational here. These are human beings that are not getting the message. They are not doing their job. This isn't about whether you're trying hard. This isn't about whether you want to do well. This is simply, I'm the manager, here's the game plan, and you have mentally decided not to do what I'm asking you to do. So you know what? I'm going to put in people that give them a shot at doing exactly what I'm asking to do. I love that Torrey did it.
The Phoenix Suns are 3-0 in the bubble thanks to Devin Booker's game winner against the Clippers.
6 seconds left in the game. Out to Booker. 5 seconds. 4 seconds. Booker on the drive. Goes up. Here's the shot. Shoot! He got it! And the Suns win the game.
Okay, first off, the Suns are 3-0 in the bubble.
Yeah, baby.
And will Devin Booker finally get the respect he deserves around the league?
Yeah, I think he is definitely getting that respect this morning. Listen, it's not going to change overnight. It isn't. This is going to be a process for the Phoenix Suns. It's going to be a process for Devin Booker right now. But I absolutely love the fact that his NBA profile is expanding. There's no doubt about that. And even the Suns' profile is expanding. Everybody is watching the bubble, and the Suns are winning, baby. This is good. This is a good trend going forward.
This is an enormous deal in any sport, but most importantly, the NBA. And here's why. We're not talking about power rankings. We're not talking about how nice it'll be if Jeff Van Gundy says nice things about Devin Booker again. We're talking about, when you talk about respect in the NBA, you're talking about referees actually doing their job, which is something they don't like to do. And now they'll be quicker to call fouls when Devin Booker gets hacked. We're talking about more All-Star games. Why does that matter? Because free agents look around the league and say, well, who else is there? And what can I do? And they see a guy like Devin Booker and they say, you know what? I'll go play with somebody like that. That gives them a chance. Why do you think no free agents really come to Phoenix? Because they've stunk for 10 years. Things like that help you get better players, help you get calls. That's what respect in the NBA means. That's why this bubble is big for the Suns.
Cardinals offensive tackle Marcus Gilbert has opted out of the 2020 season. How do you think this will impact the Cards' O-line?
You know, it's hard to say because Marcus Gilbert hasn't played in how many? 3 years for the most part. This would have been the third year. So it's really difficult to say Marcus Gilbert was going to make a massive impact for the Arizona Cardinals. I do know this. This is what I know. The Arizona Cardinals offensive line right now, I don't think is going to be as good without Marcus Gilbert. That much I do know. How that's going to impact the team, I don't know. There's a lot of guys that do like Calvin Beecham a lot. And when I say guys, I'm talking about other players from around the league that actually know Calvin Beecham. Max Starks, we just talked to him. There's guys out there that know Beecham well and think that he's going to be an excellent replacement. But to me, in the end, I got to believe Josh Jones is going to take that job over at some point in time.
Listen, it's a huge deal in the sense that anytime an organization signs an injured player and then he gets injured again and they're forced to find somebody off the street during the week, as they did with Justin Murray, then they turn around and sign that injured player again for next year, and then they don't have any OTAs or minicamp, so you want your veteran as the guy, and then that veteran opts out. The organization had a lot of stock in Marcus Gilbert. He didn't let him down. He made a personal decision, but there's no way that the organization can act like this is something they expected or it's okay. This hits them, and it hits them hard because they expected a lot from them.
UConn became the first FBS program to cancel their 2020 college football season due to the coronavirus pandemic. Do you think more schools will follow? And if so, how many? FBS, Power 5?
First of all, undoubtedly, there's going to be more schools that are going to make this kind of decision going forward. It's just not going to be in the SEC.
I look at it like this. I think this is a classic case where your program stinks. Nobody in FBS wants you in a major conference. And then suddenly in the middle of a pandemic, you realize, wow, we don't have any games remaining. Let's do the safe thing and not play. Because why play a season when we're going to be scrambling around to try to find games? UConn is hiding behind the coronavirus in this situation. They're going to pretend we care so much about the safety of our athletes. Listen, if they were in the SEC, they're playing. If they were in the ACC, they're playing. If they were in the Big Ten, they're playing. They are lying. It is not because of coronavirus. It's because they're an independent because nobody wants them.
Go Huskies.
I'm sure that they care about your support. You're about 20 minutes away from the general manager, Mike Hazen, of the Arizona Diamondbacks, who are in last place when we all thought this has a very strong potential as a playoff team, and they're not showing it. We'll talk to Mike Hazen about what in the world is going wrong in about 15-20 minutes. Up next, how do we feel about the Suns' playoff chances now? It's next on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. Mike Hayes, the general manager, Arizona Diamondbacks, coming up in 10 minutes or so here on the Doug and Wolf Show. Good morning. Wolf, Bear, and Maloney are live in the Auction Community Studios. I am out on the west side broadcasting live from Studio Wife, and I think you know about it. I think you loved it, but just in case you want to hear it.
Rebound Zubats. He loses it. Suns get it back to Rubio. Time, 6 seconds left in the game. Out to Booker. 5 seconds, 4 seconds. Booker on the drive. Goes up. Here's the shot. Shoot!
Booker!
He got it!
That's awesome. So good, D-Book.
And guys, that's what we've been waiting for. Waiting here in 2020, where sports has been this 5-month waiting room where we're just sitting here, okay, and finally we got the anticipation and the drama of a tie game with seconds to go, and then boom, the game winner for Devin Booker and the reaction of Al and Tim. But we've been waiting for a Suns team to not only win but entertain. If you had zoomed out on the post-Steve Nash era, I don't know about you guys, but I've found it hard to watch Suns basketball at times. Not just the wins and losses, but because it's just not nearly as entertaining as when Steve Nash was running the show. And so now, if they're going to come out and they're going to play a compelling brand of basketball, and they're going to be competitive, and you get excitement like that, where Al gets all fired up, the Hall of Famer behind the mic, it just, to me, it just becomes so inviting and intriguing to watch Suns basketball again.
Mm-hmm. The thing about that game, if it wasn't for the horrific officiating and the parade to the free throw line for Paul George, that's an amazing game. The Suns, 8 turnovers only. They hit threes like crazy, 17 to 32. Booker was 6 of 9 from 3. But to me, it was just, it's that team, and the Clippers cared. The Clippers wanted to win that game. I came into that game thinking that was going to be a load management game. Yep. We would not be seeing anything or very little of Kawhi Leonard.
Lakers they had just wrapped up the top seed.
Exactly. The Clippers, to me, came into that game trying to win, and they, two of the best, I won't say Paul George is one of the best, but a good defensive player in Paul George, one of the best defensive players, if not the best defensive player in Kawhi Leonard, could not stop Devin Booker when they knew that was the offense. I don't know how Ayton had 19 points and 7 boards.
Yes.
When the game ended, there were two things I did not believe. I did not believe Ayton actually had 19 points. That was the quietest 19 points I've ever seen. And I thought Saric had the loudest 13 points I'd ever seen. I got done looking at the stats. Wait, he only had 13 points? I thought he had a lot more than that. It was such good team basketball, and then to end it the way that it ended it, the symbolism of over George and Leonard by your guy is just huge. This was as entertaining as it gets. So as excited as you are, and as ready to move forward as you are, to hear the team more along the lines of, oh, okay, you know, so what? That was, we did what we did, and now we're ready to move on here and do something else. That jacks you up.
Yeah, no, there's no doubt about it. Give me the disclaimer right now, please.
Oh, no.
Ayton is going to be good. We just don't know how good. There's a lot of things we don't know about DeAndre Ayton, but there are some things we do know. He's extremely talented. He's not innately aggressive. He's got an effort button, and sometimes it's off. But I still believe the Suns drafted the right guy. Having said this,
I am sick and tired of watching DA look at dudes driving right by him for a layup. I mean, how many times in the fourth quarter alone, Basin Odeens, I did this. I sat there and I counted every time it happened in the fourth quarter. 4 times dudes went right by DeAndre Ayton and he didn't challenge a shot. How many times did he confront the penetration? 4 times in the fourth quarter. One time, ladies and gentlemen, one time he actually jumped in front of somebody, and it was a critical confrontation that resulted in the Suns getting a stop and Devin Booker hitting a shot to take a 2-point lead with 33 seconds to go. Stunning to me. Absolutely stunning. One time he jumped in front of somebody and stopped their penetration, and they missed the shot. 4 times he just stood there and watched them go right by. This guy is, for a guy that is so long and so athletic, for a guy that supposedly has a 40-inch vertical, I've never seen a man use it so rarely as DeAndre Ayton. He jumps just high enough to actually fit the definition of a jump. It's more like a hop. It's stunning to me.
Wolf, I'm with you. I'm standing on the coffee table screaming, you don't have five fouls.
Right ball.
He always plays like he has five fouls, wow. And he's not willing to touch anyone. What is going on? He shies away from contact. And then on the offensive side, you're right, Doug. How many times has he gone for a double-double? You're like, wait a minute, really? Yeah. Because on the offensive side, if he would go watch some film of Amari Stoudemire running the pick and roll with Steve Nash, I mean, peel off the pick and go hard to the hole and try and work on the hands, snatch that ball out of the air and stuff it.
The hands are a major issue.
The hands, Paul.
I mean, even his one dunk of the game came after a fumbled pass from Booker. It hit him right in the hands.
Yes.
I mean, it is a major issue for DeAndre Ayton. I don't know if it's focus. I don't know if it's lack of anticipation. I can't believe it's lack of athleticism, but I don't know what that is. And the jumpers that he takes, most of them are not bad shots. The problem is he's never figured out. You'll be even more open if you actually make guys afraid you're going to drive. If you actually make guys afraid they're going to dunk on you, those jumpers will be even more. You want to shoot the three? Dunk on people. And guess what? They'll give you every look because they don't want you dunking on them.
Here, Calvisi Consulting says, with Larry Fitzgerald being a part owner of the Suns, he needs to work one-on-one with DeAndre Ayton on the hands. You know, maybe take the jugs machine out of his backyard and just send it to the bubble. You know, they're ordering everything else down in the bubble, live chickens, full couches and refrigerators. You know, send the jugs machine down to the bubble so Aiden can work on his hands. He's got plenty of time on his hands right now as well.
Yeah, that's very true. Yeah. We don't know how this happened. A lot of people, and I think everybody can make fun of me, thought this was going to be a very good Diamondbacks team that goes to the playoffs. The math says they're 8-21 right now. What just happened? Diamondbacks general manager Mike Hazen, next on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
Doug and Wolf mornings on the home of Arizona Diamondbacks baseball. 98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. Diamondbacks front office focus.
General manager Mike Hazen joining the Doug and Wolf show. We do it every Wednesday at 8:45, and Mike, boy, I admit, I thought 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, you and I were going to be sitting here talking about the trade deadline and picking guys up for the stretch run of the playoffs. I never thought we'd be looking at the situation we are right now. And ever since you've taken over as general manager, you've put together teams that have a lot of fight. They fight off pitches. They battle every at-bat. Pitchers that throw strikes and compete like crazy. And you know what? If you lose, you lose. But the competition is high. Are you happy right now with what I would call the competitive fight of your guys? Do you see from pitch one to the last out of the ninth inning a fight for the other team on their hands when they face the Diamondbacks? Do you see competition?
Yeah, I just to kind of touch on briefly what you started out with, I believe you and I would have been in the same boat, that this was not in the range of outcomes that, while possible, that we were expecting heading into, you know, the third week of the season. Yeah, look, we've unfortunately been through this before in May of 2018, and there's other periods and pockets of times you do this. I do think this is, you know, indicative in baseball in general. When you don't hit, that's exactly what it looks like. I don't believe all the things that we're seeing from a work standpoint, a commitment to wanting to be better than what we are. But I will not disagree with what it looks like. When we, Tori and I have had this conversation multiple times over the last few days, when you don't hit, it looks like there is not that competitive fight out there. No, I don't believe that's the case. No, I don't believe that, you know, the guys that we brought in here to do that are dramatically different than what we expected. But we are not hitting. We are not scoring runs. We are not executing at the level we need to execute. There's nobody that's happy with what's happened. This is not the team that we, you know, the results from a team that we put on the field necessarily. And we have no excuses. We don't have one person that is injured. We have not been impacted by the virus. There are no excuses. We have played poorly.
So, Mike, do you support Torrey's benching of five players in the sixth? Did you support that move?
Look, I think you have watched these games that we have watched these games. I don't think it was a benching. I think it was we're down 8-1, and, you know, we are in the midst of a 60-game season that we are playing guys pretty regularly, and I think he genuinely wanted to get guys off their feet. You know, if the manager is sending messages in various subtle ways, I don't have a problem with it. I think, look, if we weren't expected to win, or to Doug's question earlier, if the expectation going into the season were different, then yeah, I might have a different take. We might have different conversations around, you know, what we're trying to accomplish. That's not what our expectation was. And to a person, in every interview you go back through the entirety of the offseason, and this is ultimately on me, all of this, what we attempted to accomplish this offseason is not playing out on the field. So standing by and waiting for it to happen in a shortened season, that dynamic is obviously one none of us have ever encountered before, but that's not an excuse either, because the other teams are playing under a 60-game dynamic as well. So every time I hear 60 games, you know, different than 162, well, so that means, you know, what did the Rockies do different that was different than what we're doing right now, right? They obviously have taken a different tack than we have. But look, I don't think standing there and watching us being down 8-1, you know, for three of the last 4 days or whatever, two of the last 4 days, no, I probably wouldn't stand there either.
Mm-hmm.
Mike Hazen and general manager, Arizona Diamondbacks, joining Doug and Wolf. Almost every year of your tenure, I should say every year of your tenure, you've gotten this team to September 1st in a good position. 2017, you're 4.5 games up on the wild card. 2018, you're tied for first and a game and a half up on the wild card. 2019, you're only 3.5 back of the wild card, and yet 2017, the Dodgers sweep. 2018, you ended up 8.5 back after being in first place. And 2019, you weren't able to make up any ground in September. I'm worried that the collection of players just can't handle pressure, because this season started and it was, hey, we got to go, we got to go, and nobody's going. How do you coach pressure? Why are you confident you have a core group of guys that can handle pressure? Because it doesn't look great in pressure situations.
Yeah, I don't know how to really categorize starting off a season in a pressure situation. I think
it is weird.
I think your points on the other seasons are valid in that you're pointing at a very specific time at the end of the season, and you know, 17 we pushed it across, and 18 and 19 it wasn't. You know, I would still even contrast 18 and 19. You know, 19 up through the middle of September we were coming hard on a big winning streak in a very good position, and then it fell apart again. I it's hard for me to make gross generalizations on those types of things, and then to layer it on to the beginning of a season is even harder for me, quite frankly, even in this environment. I think, look, the dynamics certainly changed. This is no excuse. We're doing a radio show, and if we had started this radio show with what's the answer would have been we haven't played well at all, and there are no excuses. Mm-hmm. I'm gonna explain a few things for the fact that we're on radio. I think that we have historically gotten off to good starts. We didn't do that this year. Unfortunately for this year, that is costing us at a much higher rate than otherwise. We can't use the, well, on one, if it were 162, it's not 162. So that this is the hand we've been dealt, and we have to play it. And so far we haven't played it well. And, you know, unfortunately, as it gets to baseball, we never want to be in a position of have tos. And I think the next week to 10 days is going to be very indicative of what the have tos, and we're going to have to react based on, you know, how we respond to this start.
Just following up on that, Mike, is it possible that there was too much talk about the 60-game season and the fact that it was going to be a sprint and you had to get out of the gate and play well? Do you think this factored into the start at all?
It's an interesting question. We've had that conversation. I don't think so. I look across the league. So if that – I mean – every team in baseball was talking about the 60-game schedule. It wasn't right. like, you know, it was sort of some blind random thing that popped up on the day and said, hey, instead of playing 162, you're playing 60. Everyone knew what was in front of them. Every team has had to handle this the exact same way. Everyone has had the dynamics thrown at them, the challenges of the coronavirus, what they were doing with their spring training. It was completely atypical for every team, but it was completely atypical for every team uniformly spread across 30 clubs. So I have a hard time saying that, you know, our reaction to what was starting for the season was that wildly different than what other teams did. And even if it were, when the bell rings, you need to be ready to play.
Yep.
And, you know, I think that, you know, there are teams that have gotten off to really good starts and we have not. And yes, we are going to examine those things as to why, and we are having those conversations every day. And, you know, we are talking about what subtle changes we can make. I don't think it's drastic changes. I think this team, we feel, has talent on it. And we feel like we're just not performing to the level of that talent right now for whatever reason. And it's no one thing. There are many, many different aspects to it. The central part of it for us has certainly been boiled more down to the offense than anything else. I think some of our early pitching woes have smoothed out a little bit. I mean, if we make that play up the middle last night, you know, Bums probably into the sixth inning with a pretty good outing, we still had a zero on the board. So I think that's probably been the much larger issue that we're focused on.
You came on, Mike Hazen, general manager, Diamondbacks, during the postseason last year, and we're just talking generic postseason stuff, and you mentioned how you started getting specific on how impressed you were with certain at-bats during the postseason, and you were saying, that's what we're looking for with the Diamondbacks. We want this type of at-bat, this type of at-bat. Yesterday, a rookie pitcher in his second start had five of his six innings in which he threw fewer than 14 pitches. I know that's not a Diamondbacks at-bat. I know that's not what you want. Where's the disconnect? Is it Torrey to the hitting coach? Is it the hitting coach? Is Darnell Cole's job in jeopardy? Is it the hitting coach to the players? When it's so organizational, when you've got so many guys barely batting above 200 and in some cases below 100, how did this happen?
Yeah, we have spent a lot of time on our offensive approach and what we're trying to ultimately get to. And yes, there is a commitment from the organization in terms of addressing and seeing this through. I think the players are well aware of what our expectations are. I think the players articulate what they're trying to do. I believe that when we get as a team into these situations, and unfortunately, like I said, it's happened before, even probably to a greater sense in May of 2018, it becomes a situation where guys go to the plate trying to be the guy that ends this sort of, you know, dry run that we're on. And I think those things become contagious. I think there's a level of urgency that's felt in the box that when guys are going great, you know, they're dealing with the pitches they have to hit more regularly. That they can do damage on. Those are the things that we are pounding through, that the pitches that we should be trying to do damage on are, you know, very specific, and we should be hunting and looking in those areas. And though, you know, we're talking about those messages every day. I would agree with you though. You know, you have young pitchers going out there in their second starts. It shouldn't be a matter of being able to run through our nine hitters as efficiently as that guy did last night. Those are things that we need to continue to focus on.
Mike, does Mad Bum being at a loss about his velocity concern you in any way, shape, or form?
No, not really.
Why?
I think that one of the things that we signed up for, and you look across the league, I think one of the things you signed up for with sort of the smashing of the season into the middle of the year, there were going to be a lot of differences that you wouldn't normally have experienced, I think. You know, lack of spring training in the middle of the year. We see velocity dips all the time coming out of the chute in spring training. Guys build into their velocity during the course of the year. We are still very early, third start into the process of a season, even though it's August. So from a performance team standpoint, the excuse there to me, or the reason, is there is no excuse. For the individual performances, I still think from a physical standpoint, you have to take into account, you know, how we got to this point of the season. And so we feel like that's going to come. We're not talking about drastic differences with his velocity. You know, this was back, we used to have the Zach Greinke conversations about velocity too. Mm-hmm. Like if the velocity range is 89 to 92, he knows how to pitch at 89, 88, 89, 90 is not that significantly different. It's much different than a guy that's typically pitching at 97, pitching at 90.
Mike, you'll know him better than me, but I think Jake Lamb is one of the best human beings in the game of baseball. And I just know him on a very superficial level. I think he's so accountable. I root for that guy like crazy. But it's a business. He's batted around the Mendoza line since the halfway point of his All-Star selection in 2017. And now he's at 065. How does he get this organization closer to a World Series? What are the benefits when you're in there that you know this is why we keep Jake Lamb on this roster?
To the first point, I would concur, even knowing him much deeper than a superficial level, he is one of the best human beings. So that is 100% accurate. Look, he struggled. He got hurt. He struggled. He struggled to come back from that injury. I think from a timing standpoint, you know, things just haven't clicked for him. Singling him out in the tub of guys that are hitting 200 or below, unfortunately, you know, he's not the only one, and this doesn't necessarily rest on his shoulders by any stretch of the imagination. Yes, we're hoping, we're still seeing, you know, a lot of things outside of in-game at-bats and driving results. I mean, he really hit that ball hard last night to first base, and you know, it's not a bad luck situation. That situation was, but it's not in general has been. He like other guys have to get their swings in a position to be doing damage for us, and that hasn't happened yet. It's going to take our offense was not constructed around any one or two individual hitters. Our offense, to do what we needed to do and pitch the way we were going to pitch, play defense in our bullpen to where we were going to be the team that we needed to be, is reliant on 8 or 9 hitters clicking. We're not going to be the 10-run offense. We never were going to be the 10-run offense a night. We're certainly not a 0, 1, or 2-run offense, and that's what needs to shift. We need to get this offense into a 4 to 5-run-a-night mode that is going to rely on 8 or 9 hitters doing their jobs every night to get us there. And to date, we just haven't done that.
Mike, atypical year, bad start. Does that make you more likely to be aggressive at the trade deadline?
I think we need to be very cognizant of what's happening. I think we need to be objective as much as I go home every night in a certain place in my mind in terms of frustration. That emotion, that frustration can't bleed over into what we need to look at objectively. And, you know, we need to start playing better. That's the way I'll put it. We need to start playing better across the spectrums of our game. Like I said, I think the lion's share of what we've focused on has been offensive. We have had other ways we've lost games via the starting pitching route and the one bullpen route. We need to be objective about what's happening. We cannot get wrapped up in my opinion, my job, our jobs in the front office of, you know, what coulda, woulda, shoulda happened, and we can deal with that later. But I still think we need to be objective about what's happening on our roster. And we're hopeful that we're going to play better. We're hopeful that there is talent on this team that historically, up and down that lineup, has performed at this level and in a lot of cases consistently performed at a high level in this league. Like I said, no excuses. That hasn't happened.
You said it really simple. We've got to do something here in the next 7 to 10 days, or, you know, that's going to affect a lot of future decisions. Other than just simply the blanket answer, we got to win, what do you need to see in the next 7 to 10 days before you make some of these difficult decisions that you're suggesting?
We've spent all interview on it. We'll continue to do so. We need to see our offense consistency improve dramatically. Our impact of the baseball, we have 2 home runs. That one leaves me scratching my head. We have 2 home runs through 11 games. And this is a team of hitters that have 30 home run hitters on it. We need to impact the baseball significantly better than we have. we need to continue to improve our at-bats to where night after night, even on those days, look, second half of the game last night, we impacted a ton of balls. None of them fell in for hits. That's going to happen. How do you win those games? Last night aside, we were down 8-1 already. In a normal environment, when it's a 3-3, 3-2, 4-3 game, how do you win that game when you have nights like you did last night in the second half of the game? We are not consistently putting that forth. We need to see that happen. We need our starting pitching to continue to get into form. I know it's only we're going through the rotation three times. This is our third time through now. We need to tighten that up in certain areas. And then the bullpen needs to keep pitching in at a level that the bullpen, by and large, has done so far. We need to see all those things happen very quickly.
Mike, you're a stand-up guy, man. I appreciate you coming on the broadcast and being so straightforward. Thank you very much for your time, buddy.
Good luck, Mike.
All right, guys. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'll talk to you soon.